A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here, and welcome once again to the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. Coming up, Academy Award-winning megastar Gary Oldman takes us behind the scenes with the BFI re-release of his 1997 directorial debut film, Nil by Mouth. Acting royalty Dame Emma Thompson warms our hearts with her new children's book, Jim's Spectacular Christmas. The always hilarious David Baddiel unwraps his 9th children's book, Virtually Christmas. Hollywood legend Matthew Modine dishes the details on taking on the iconic role of Atticus Finch in To Kill a Mockingbird at London's Guildford Theatre. All of that and so much more still to come. So Vassos, kick things off and tell us who's first.
He's swinging an Oscar in his left hand, a Golden Globe in his right, and 25 years on, he's about to re-release his writing and directing debut, the astonishing Nil by Mouth, remastered by the BFI. This is Radio Goldman. It's Gary Oldman.
Nice, Vassos. Oh. All right, what about this film? Exhausting to watch again. I'm sure it was exhausting to make, but it is a brilliant, brilliant movie. And for people who don't know what it concerns itself with, would you like to enlighten them?
It is basically about a dysfunctional sort of family, and its themes are... Well, it's not a movie you take a date to on a Friday or a Saturday night. Its themes are, you know, drug addiction and alcoholism and domestic abuse. And even though it was made, you know, 25 years ago, I think it's still as prevalent as it, you know, as it was then.
Prevalent and relevant, maybe more than ever.
Yeah.
I remember watching it for the first time. I remember what that felt like. What are your memories of making it?
Well, I had one camera. We shot on Super 16, a little Arton, and we shot, I think it was like something like 500,000 feet of film. And this camera was, you could hammer nails with it, you know, and then it was solid.
It was agricultural.
It was fantastic, this thing. And what that meant was that the actors would have to do many, many, many takes. Now it's a lot easier. You shoot digital, you shoot multi-camera. So back then it was, I talk about back then, it really does feel like dinosaur days with, film running through a camera. But they were really committed to the material, and that, I can't thank them enough for that, because they work their butts off.
Let's name some names.
Well, we got the wonderful Ray Winston, who was the first one on board. There were a lot of people. I was surrounded by many, many, many people who did not want to make it and were saying to my manager at the time, still my manager, but at the time they said, you know, it's career suicide, don't let him do it. And, oh, God, now he thinks he can direct. And so there were a lot of... It was uphill. I couldn't raise any money from Britain. And so I got Luc Besson, who I'd worked with on Leon. He put some money up, raised some money, and I put the rest. I sort of put the rest up. So it was very much a kind of I'd made a little money from film. I didn't have Lamborghinis and really lavish. I didn't have what I would call a lavish lifestyle and expensive works of art hanging over the place. So I thought I would buy myself a moving picture. And the intention was, It was an experiment. It had a very specific point of view going in, that I think there's two dolly shots, one prime lens. There's no high shots. There's no low shots. There's, you know what I mean? It's pretty much head on. A lot of long lenses to give you a sort of a voyeuristic feel. But also going in very tight and close, so that you
uncomfortably get close at times.
So you get a sort of, you get, it's a mix of voyeurism and sort of claustrophobia.
Yeah.
So there was a very there was a very strong point of view going in, and some of the people were on board and some weren't. And Charlie Creed Miles, who you know, it's a funny thing. When I saw Charlie and Usher, I went and saw these kids, and Charlie did this improvisation. I thought he was absolutely wonderful, and he ended up being in the film. And from there, has enjoyed a career. He would have had the career, I think, if I hadn't found him and Usher. I mean, I basically was just, I appreciated what was already there. But it really is lovely when you see people do well and they're like your kids, you know, you're sort of growing up and you think, oh, they're really, you know, you're really sort of proud of your kids, you know.
Wow. And what a team, what a gang, you know, not just in front of the camera, behind the camera as well. Slow Horses is coming back. Can't wait.
December we get.
Yeah, I didn't really want to talk to you about that because I thought, we'll get him in again for that.
Well, I'd love to come back. I always.
Yeah, but you don't live around the corner, do you? That's the thing.
I don't live around the corner, but, you know, I'm back after Christmas. We start the, what are we doing? We start the 4th in February. Yeah.
Okay. Cool, man. So cool. Gary joined us in April to talk about playing Jackson Lamb in the Apple TV Plus drama Slow Horses. Season 2 will be coming to Apple TV Plus from Friday, 2nd of December. But he was here primarily today to talk about this Nil by Mouth re-release in 4K across the UK this Friday from the 4th of November. Find out more at bfi.org.uk. Gary, I love you. Thank you for coming here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for always coming to say hello, for always fitting us into your schedule.
All right.
We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
There ain't nothing like a brand new festive kids book to get us all in the mood for you know what.
Yeah.
Jim's Spectacular Christmas is out now. There ain't nothing like Axel Scheffler to bring the brilliant words to life. And how about those words? There ain't nothing like a dame, Emma Thompson.
Oh my God, I think I'm going to have to go back to bed now. You're all so bright and awake.
But isn't that because you've been in bed since Friday lunchtime?
That's right, yes. Yes, because I was doing something for you, Chris, wasn't I?
Yes, you were. Well, for Ukraine, via
for
me.
For Ukraine, exactly.
Thank you very much
for that.
I
was getting drunk for the Ukraine.
Yes, it's very important to get drunk for charity whenever possible.
Yes.
Especially for all the money you raised. So you had gorgeous Michelle and Simon Orange, who were the winning bidders for the lunch.
Yes.
Where did you go? What did you have? What did you enjoy most? Can you remember anything?
I can oddly remember quite a lot. It was Simon. It was Adam. Okay. Stop it.
First
stop
positions,
it.
Everyone.
And Adam
Emma Yoke,
Hanling's restaurant Frog in Covent Garden.
Yes.
And it was a tasting menu and it was absolutely sublime. And we were right next to the kitchen. So you could see everybody squirreling away at their work. And Adam's so young and it already has about a million places all with Michelin stars. He's extraordinary.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, of course, Michelle Dockery and Hayley Atwell were behaving very well and didn't have anything to drink. So I had all theirs.
That's nice.
And it was tasting. So there was a pairing with each thing. And I don't drink during the day. Obviously, I make up for it at night, but I was just trolleyed by the end of it. I actually had to be handled into the street, assisted.
This is all true, by the way. So obviously, when drinks are paired with dishes, it's called a pairing. But you had a quadrupling, didn't you? Because you were drinking 3-for-1. You were drinking for three.
In many ways, that's so true.
And then I heard the tequila came out at about 4:30, and then things went.
No. I left.
Level.
I went. I couldn't have gone there.
Are you? This is not what I'm hearing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what? Maybe I've forgotten.
I think that's
probably
what happened.
That's not good. Oh, people,
but thank
that's
you.
Not good.
Thank you on behalf of DEC, the Disasters Emergency Committee. You nearly had one
yes.
of your own, but thankfully that was
absolutely averted. Always happy to serve.
We got around there. All right, Jim's Spectacular Christmas. Every Tuesday here, up until Christmas, with 10 Tuesdays to go, we celebrate Christmas full on. So every Tuesday's a Christmas show. That's
okay.
That's how we roll.
That's nice.
Okay, Emma. And Jim's Spectacular Christmas, this book by Emma Thompson and Axel Scheffler, rather. The renowned Axel Scheffler, should get his name right, is perfect for us. So I want this story to be real. It sort of is a bit, isn't it?
It is sort of a bit real.
Yeah.
Because it's about a dog who did live at the V&A. So Henry Cole, who ran the V&A for Prince Albert, who was a very cool dude. I mean, he built that whole thing and was so fierce on getting everyone in to, for instance, the Great Exhibition. He was the one who set up the shilling days or the pennies or whatever it was when folk could bust in from all parts of the country. I mean, he was very sort of civic-minded. I think he must have been rather wonderful. Anyway, Henry Cole was his sort of amanuensis in the V&A, and he had a dog called Jim who went with him everywhere. And of course, because the V&A's loads of different buildings that were built over many decades, really, the miles, you could walk for miles. And this little dog was sketched by his master, Henry Cole, who must have been a very nice man. You can tell by the way in which he drew his dog. And Henry Cole invented the Christmas card.
Is that true?
Yes, it's true.
Because I know that's in the story, but yeah. Is that actually what happened?
That's actually what happened. He invented the blooming Christmas
card. Because somebody had to, because you don't...
No,
It's like the spoon, isn't it? Somebody had to invent it at
exactly.
one point.
Exactly.
Somebody had to eat all the poisonous fruits and die so we could eat the ones that weren't. Things
exactly.
like that.
Well, Christmas was sort of invented by the Victorians, and then the Norwegians sent us trees, and that was it. We were off to the races,
Charles
weren't
Dickens
we?
Had a lot to do with the quickening of that whole process.
He did. And there's quite a lot, because I love Dickens, I expect I was highly influenced, you know, because Jim was once used as a chimney sweeping brush. He was attached to the end of a broomstick.
And that's true as well.
No, that's not true. I made that up.
You don't know.
No, they didn't send dogs up chimneys. They valued dogs too much. They only send up children. Who they didn't value. Children, poor children.
And were children then? Had the Charles Act come?
No, absolutely not. That's quite late on. In fact, the idea of... It was Thomas Coram, really, who was Dickensian in Times, wasn't he? Wait a minute, I'm going to get... Somebody look it up. You've got your phones, haven't you? Mm-hmm. Coram invented the idea of... treating children better and treating...
Differently to adults, protecting them,
particularly poor children, which is where the Coram... Trust, I think they're called.
Should be called the Forum,
it's Coram,
it?
Anyway.
The Coram Forum.
And it was Thomas Coram who also must have been very clear-sighted and kind.
Mindful,
yeah.
So what do you want Jim's Spectacular Christmas to do?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I think... I think it's a nice thing to read. I think it would be nice if people looked at their dogs differently. I offered them things to read. It's a cosy story. That's what it is. It's something to make you feel cosy at Christmas time, thinking about family and thinking about, you know, Christmas cards. Are they a good thing or are they not now? I don't send them anymore because I feel a bit guilty about
them. Don't do presents anymore. We do presents for the kids, but we don't do presents for the grown-ups.
We don't either. We've just stopped because we've got too much stuff anyway.
You know, it's really funny. We'd played it the other day on the radio.
What?
Because we always buy each other presents.
Yeah.
The virtual giving of presents is the best thing ever. What I was going to get you was... I'm going, no way, I would have loved that. What I was going to get you... It's the funniest game in... But you've got to mean it.
Or on the radio, you can say, and here is your Ferrari. That's lovely. Gosh, it's so big, isn't it? It's taken up so much space in this studio. Do you know what I mean?
Emma, great to see you.
Lovely to see
Thanks
you guys.
Thanks for everything.
No, not at all.
Everything. Jim's Spectacular Christmas is out now. Emma Thompson and Axel Scheffler, and it's absolutely awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Our favourite comedies, our favourite books, tweets, even to us English, our favourite song. Now he's written our kids' new favourite Christmas book, Virtually Christmas. Time to Rescue Santa from the Internet is out now. So... When is a bad deal a really good deal and a really big deal? When it's wow. David Baddiel.
Thank you very much.
I think it was okay.
No, it wasn't.
I really like that one.
Yeah, oh, the old deal and deal, Baddiel.
Deal or no deal. Deal or no Baddiel. A bad deal. Yeah. Oh, God, I get it through.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, bada, bada,
what
bing,
was it
bada,
that, bada, I did a joke Baddiel? Once about Theresa May. What did Theresa May say about Brexit? Oh, God, I can't remember the joke. I'd rather a good deal than a bad deal or something, she said.
No deal than a bad deal.
No deal, yeah. Yes, that's right. And I did a joke, which is now not very topical, about when some Brexit secretary resigned. I said maybe I should be Brexit secretary next time so that it will be finally true that no deal is better than a badeal. And I think that is my most liked tweet of all time still.
Yay! Well, pretty high bar, by the way.
Pretty
yeah,
high bar.
Oh, God, yeah.
How are you feeling about being charged £7 a month to carry on tweeting?
Not good about that, actually.
Will you pay up?
I'm with Stephen King. Have you seen that?
Nope.
It's an amazing thing, actually. I presently have, talking about well-liked tweets, a very well-liked tweet, which is that Stephen King said, I'm not paying that. You should basically be paying me, which is true. He's a great writer, to be providing content on this platform. And underneath it, and if you've seen this, Elon Musk has started haggling with him and said, what will you pay? Maybe $8? I don't know. We have to pay the bill somehow. And I wrote above it, you know what, I'm no king of business, but I think I might have sorted this out before I paid the $44 billion. Like, I might have done some research to say, will people pay for this?
No, I know, but the thing about Elon Musk is, you know, he is mercurial, there's no question about that, and, you know, he is sort of impulsive sometimes, but his business history suggests that, you know, he's no one-trick pony, and he knows exactly what he's doing all the time, because, you know, he sold his first company with his brother when they were, like, 19. You know, right. He's a serial businessman. He's not just had one big hit and then has made so much money he can afford to stuff everything else up. I can't believe he didn't do his due diligence, and this okay. is all part of a big play.
Right. I don't know if I agree. Well, as someone who owns a Tesla, I think he runs some good companies,
yes.
right? But I think that there is also a history, a wider history, of people with loads and loads of money doing very well and then deciding, I need to be bigger than someone who earns loads of money. Right. I need to make my mark on history. You know, people sort of do that, I think. They want to control bigger things than just their own money. They want to say, no, I'm clearly a really important person. Look at all my money. Well, how do I really make that importance felt?
Yeah.
And if you control one of the major platforms that, you know, is how people talk, how people form opinions, then you really are making a difference. But what you might have done at that point is make a business mistake.
What, by agreeing to pay too much money for it?
Just or because no one knows how Twitter's going to... I'm not a king of business, yeah. right? Let's be clear about that. But I don't know how Twitter's going to make money, and it feels like he doesn't quite know. Maybe he's got an instinct, and his instinct might be good, that it can. But at the moment, it feels more about him wanting to be a very important person.
None of this gets us any close to your brilliant new ninth children's book, does it, David Baddiel?
It doesn't. And if I'm going to make any money, which clearly I'm not, from Dogecoin, I need to sell copies of this book.
Yes, you do. By the way, we're back... Oh, my God, we're back to the virtual world,
aren't
we?
Yeah.
All right, well...
Shall I tell you what happens?
Please, well,
not the whole thing, obviously, well, just the basic
we
idea.
We have a review in.
Oh, OK, great. I would love your reviews.
OK, well, it's from Young Mary again, who reviewed your last book.
Yeah, she's brilliant.
She was 7 the last time you had a book out. She's now 8.
If I keep going, she'll be about 40.
Yeah.
And still doing children's books.
And Vassos, she read Emma Thompson's book, so she reviewed that yesterday. She's 8.
Emma Thompson's our children's book?
Yeah. Yes, yesterday, yeah.
All right.
It's really good.
Okay.
It's not as good as yours.
That's all right. I've just always, obviously, I think David Wellams felt this about me when I first started writing children's books. Like, oh, not another celebrity writing children's books.
It triggered you a little bit, didn't it?
Sorry?
That triggered you a little bit.
It did trigger me a bit. Obviously, I'm thinking, like, as we said, I'm not good with money. I don't want the market to be stolen by dames.
Dames or Davids?
Yeah.
The next dame, David Wellams. That sounds good, doesn't it? Mm. So Mary now must be the most well-read 8-year-old in Britain because you keep making her read books for the show that you're supposed to read for the show.
She thinks it's a treat. She doesn't realise that she's actually... I'm putting her to work.
Yeah. She needs to give you an invoice.
It's all about how you present it.
Yeah. Yeah. So on Monday, trick or treat, says Mary. Treat, Mary. Here's another book to read before 9 o'clock tonight.
Yeah. And if you wouldn't mind,
700
have a think
words.
About what you think about it, and then I'll record you saying it.
Okay, so the book is called... David Baddiel's book is called Virtually Christmas, Time to Rescue Santa from the Internet. And it's not just the situation that may be revolting, but the kids are revolting as well, aren't they?
A kid is revolting from the fact that a company that may or may not be based on a real internet company called Winterzone in my book has basically patented Christmas, owns Christmas, owns Santa, and is thinking of making Christmas five times a year just to make money. They've got this thing called Santa avatars that appear, sort of holograms of Santa everywhere, and there's no sleighs, just drones deliver presents or whatever. And everyone seems all right with this except one girl called Etta Baxter, whose grandma, no longer with us, told her about what Christmas used to be like, when it was sort of rubbish, when it was sort of rubbish Christmas crackers with terrible jokes written by the Doge guys or whatever. But she loves the idea of that Christmas, and she's got a little box with little trinkets in it and bits of sort of old cracker and old tinsel from the tree. Anyway, she sees a delivery man, an old delivery man, and she thinks, wait a minute, could that person be Santa? And I'm not telling you anything more.
Oh, that's great, man. Yeah. The mention of drones. Do you think drones have had their day?
No.
Don't
you think so?
They seem pretty around to me.
Really?
They're just getting started.
I don't think you see them, but you see them in the parks every weekend. There's a guy on QVC who is the drone guy. He's the go-to drone guy. He just sells the drones.
Oh, really?
He's very good.
On QVC?
Yeah.
And they have a lot... Does he have a friend who they chat about and say, this drone, you can get it now for...
Yeah.
On QVC, on advertising channel, I often watch it because it's really funny.
So do I.
And I wonder if does anyone ever buy the terrible piece of jewellery or whatever it is at the first price?
Well, they usually sell out, don't they? They say
they're selling out. But
I believe
them. But if you watch it twice, you'll know that price is going to go down.
Oh, okay, fair enough. See, back to prices going up and down again.
Yeah.
Love to see you again. Oh,
have I gone?
Well, it's because it is 10 o'clock, but it's nearly 10 o'clock. Yeah,
oh, so that was good. That's very quick.
It was 20-odd minutes. It's more than you can get on
by
Radio 2, that's for sure. David Baddiel, Virtually Christmas, Time to Rescue Santa from the Internet. You know, and phrases like the Santavatar and things like that. That must have been fun, playing with all those.
It's really fun. Yeah. It is really fun, right, for children. And, this is my ninth one.
Yeah.
God.
Are you disappointed with the time you've had on the show? Or is it genuinely just flown by?
No, I'm not disappointed. I enjoyed it.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
From the iconic Full Metal Jacket to the phenomenon Stranger Things, our next guest has been a constant and very welcome part of our lives for near on 40 years. He's now about to hit the West End hard into Kill a Mockingbird at the Gielgud Theatre. So please welcome everyone's favourite dapper papa, it's magnificent Matthew Modine.
All right, Matthew.
Oh my god, I'm gonna come here every morning.
You're welcome. You'll be around, won't you?
So I'll be here.
That
is
a possibility. So To Kill a Mockingbird, it has amazing reviews. You've been involved in it already. You can steal the 5-star reviews it's already achieved here. They're not yet yours, really, because you don't start till the 21st of November, but you can have them, can't you? That's a tightrope.
Hijack them.
Yeah, good for you. Well, when did you land? What's your preparation been like for this amazing play?
We've been here about this started the third week of rehearsals now, and starting to feel confident, feeling...
What does that mean? What does that mean?
Well, it's 130 pages of text. Aaron Sorkin is the author of Harper Lee's book, you know, the adaptation and making it into a play. And he kind of happily says that there's more dialogue for the Atticus Finch than Hamlet, you know, and it's a lot. It's an amazing part, and it's an important part. While it's about systemic racism in the United States and the judicial system, it's about something much bigger. It's about that anybody who has to run away from something because they're scared. And because of their race or their religion, it's about that. It's about something that happens around the world. You know, justice is supposed to be blind, and if we can't get a fair trial because of our sexual orientation or our sex the color of our skin, then the judicial system is a lie.
It also contains one of the greatest, most inspirational, profound, prescient lines ever written, which is trying to do the right thing is the right thing, which is just so, it's just the best line. I think about it every day.
Yeah.
Just trying to do the right thing. Doesn't matter if it doesn't work out. Trying to do the right thing is
the right thing. It's as right as you can do, I think. Matthew.
You know, I'm looking out your window.
Yeah, sorry
and
about
I'm
that.
Thinking, in 1984 5, yeah. Stanley Kubrick made his Vietnam just across the river here.
I know.
At the Isle of Dogs.
Where do we want to go with you and your career? Do you know what I did last night, Matthew? What did I do last night? What did I watch last night in preparation for you coming in today? What did I watch?
Full Metal Jacket.
No.
No.
Go again.
Not Stranger Things.
No. What was the film that got you Full Metal Jacket?
Vision Quest. No.
No.
Oh, shoot.
Well, I think it got you. I may be wrong. You know better than I do.
Streamers?
Birdie. No.
Birdie. Oh.
I watched Birdie last night.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful... Peter Gabriel did the music. It was his first time he did a score for a film. And he's really my voice. He speaks for me in the film.
But you and Nicolas Cage, I mean, I don't know many people who've seen Birdie. But what a film. What a film. Just explain what that film is. I want people to watch Birdie this weekend.
First, I have to tip my hat to Alan Parker, who's, I think, arguably one of the greatest filmmakers ever, you know. And he just passed away last year. And such a tremendous man, and it was a book that people said could never be made into a film. And I auditioned for Nicolas Cage's part, and when Alan called me and said I was going to be in the film, I said, are you going to change the character's name? And he said, what do you mean? I said, am I going to play an Italian American, or are you going to change his name to something more white, waspy? And he said, no, you're going to play Birdie. And I said, no, I auditioned for Al Colombato. And he said, yeah, but you're going to be great. You're going to play Birdie. And I swear, I got down on my hands and knees and begged for everybody that's been misunderstood and beaten up by life and wants justice to exist in the world to help me to play that role of Birdie. And I'm not a religious person, but I'm spiritual. And I felt like my body was filled with the spirit of people who were misunderstood, and they guided me and helped me get through that film.
It's funny because we had Gina Davis. I know you've worked with Gina Davis, of course you have in the past, but we had her on the show a couple of weeks ago, and a lot of the younger members of the production team have not seen Thelma and Louise because they weren't born, right? Yeah. And we're like, you don't understand how great this movie is, and it hasn't age with time. Then we were getting texts from listeners, and women especially saying this has changed their life.
Yeah.
You know, and I said to Mira and Ozzie Jane, who works here, you've got to see it because it's still box fresh, you know. And I forgot about the end of Birdie, which is sort of the opposite of the end to Thelma and Louise.
Yeah. You know, Alan wanted Birdie to die. He was up on the roof, and Alan had an East End accent. He talked Irish, and I struggled to understand what he was talking about a lot of times. And he would direct while the cameras were rolling, and I couldn't understand him. And I'd turn and look at him and say, "What?" And he'd say, he'd go off on me. I don't know what I can swear, how violently I can swear. But he gave me. There's a British word you guys use that we're not allowed to use in the United States. It begins with a C and ends with a T.
Yeah, we're not allowed to use it here, really.
Really, yeah. No. He just berated me. And at the end of the film, he wanted Birdie to jump off the building and be dead. And the studio, his family, the crew, everybody didn't want Birdie to die. And when we were up on the roof and he saw that second level, would just be like a 10-foot jump. And then he said, and he'll jump and he'll turn around and look at me and say, what? He has the rest of the bloody movie. And that was it.
It's so cool. Yeah. Watch Birdie. Watch it. You will love that film. Matthew, you have not disappointed. They say never meet your heroes, but don't listen to those guys. Uh-huh. You're amazing.
Thank you, Chris.
You're so cool. To Kill a Mockingbird, why wouldn't you want to go and see Matthew Modine? Give me one reason. Okay, and you can take all day if you like. Why wouldn't you want to go see Matthew Modine in To Kill a Mockingbird? tokillamockingbird.co.uk begins Monday, 21st November till March 2023 at London's Gielgud Theatre. So does that mean you're going to be here for Christmas then?
I'll be here, yeah. I'll be here till next spring.
Let's do a lunch.
Yes, sir.
Come on, let's do it.
Yeah.
I dare you.
Yeah, come on.
All right, let's do it. That's so cool. Super cool.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
All right, we've heard from some of our top-notch guests already, but still to come, Master of Tasks Alex Horn spills all the beans about his brand new Channel 4 sitcom, The Horn Section TV show. Dancing duo Helen Skelton and Gorka Marquez waltz into the studio with a Strictly Come Dancing update. The superbly stoic Ryan Holiday takes us through his brand new book, Discipline in Destiny, The Power of Self-Control. And the legendary sports broadcaster Gabby Logan turns the pages of her new autobiography, The First Half. So let's get right back to all of that. Vassos, who's next?
So I asked Rachel how to intro our next guest, who is, of course, her husband. And she said, honestly, just tell him what I want for Christmas. But then she didn't tell me. So, Alex, you're on your own there. But you're about to have millions of new fans as the Horn Section TV show hits Channel 4 tonight. It's the hilarious and long-suffering Alex Horn.
All right. Well, Morning, first of all, it doesn't hit Channel 4 tonight. It's available on all four as of now.
Correct.
All episodes. But thanks, Vass.
Thanks, Vassos.
It's
Morning.
It's Vassos half the story Alexander again.
Good half.
Take your pick.
I like So Silly Sicily. I thought it was smooth and understandable.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. From one pro to another.
Hello, everyone. thanks for having me here again.
Your show, this TV show, is off the charts good. Honestly, mate, it's 5 stars. It's 10 out of 10. It's whatever you want it to be. Would you like to try? I thought I'd watched episode 1. Apparently, I watched episode 6.
Yeah, that happened. Yeah, that's happened a few times. I've chatted to a few journalists who said, it's weird you start at that point, but no, that's you've watched the last episode.
I'm leaving the band.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I loved. I thought, oh, what a great way to say... Well, you know, because I thought, hit the ground running. It sounds like they'd maybe written like 5 episodes and then they came to the 6th. Oh, this is so good. Let's start here. But actually, that was the last one.
I think you should watch them all backwards and see if it works like that. Maybe that's a new way.
I think it will work backwards because they're beautifully silly, so it doesn't really matter.
Yes, it's definitely silly. I'll take that.
Tell us about the passive-aggressive psychotherapy.
Well, the show is mainly me trying to work with my friends.
Yes.
So Tim Key plays my psychotherapist.
Passive aggressive. Very passive aggressive.
He steals something in the show, really sinister. I don't want to say what it is. A piece of a children's thing.
He's also obsessed with celebrities' phone numbers.
Yeah. I think he's horrible. But I'm always beta in the show. I'm always belittled by everybody from episode 1 to 6. So Tim's just another person in my life who's trampling all over me.
And it's not so much that your character is narcissistic. He's trying to be narcissistic.
Yeah, I want to be a star, my character. I play a man called Alex Horn in the show.
Yeah, developing a diva, which is going to be confusing for a lot of people. We're in a Vic Reeves, Jim Moyer territory here, aren't we?
Shall I explain what the show is? Because that won't clear it up. Because the show is me and the band, the Horn Section, making a TV show called The Horn Section TV Show for Channel 4, all about me and the band, the Horn Section, making a show for Channel 4 called The Horn Section TV Show.
Yeah.
Does that clear it up?
Yeah, it's like the Larry Sanders Show, isn't it? No, I'm not saying it's a rip-off at all. I'm just saying it's an homage to shows that are like that.
Yeah, 30 Rock, Extras, Alan Partridge
They're the
show.
Best shows. They're the best shows. Right, okay. So, look, we can jump around wherever you like with this. First of all, I thought the producer, who clearly has only got her role via nepotism because she's somebody's niece...
Oh, in the show, yes. I thought you were talking about an actor who plays a person.
No.
It's all so complicated.
I'm not gonna say that, am I?
Yeah, well, I thought, this is a bit unfortunate. Lucy, yes, Lucy
because I watched episode 6,
yes.
Right? I thought you and Rachel had a secret teenage daughter and this was her.
I see. No, Rachel is in the show, but we only have boys. We have 5 sons at the start of the series and 7 by the end.
It's so fun.
We get busy.
I'm teaching on the brink of spoiling here because I thought I'd watched episode 1. I'm allowed to watch episode 1 and talk about everything in episode 1 because it sets up the other 5 episodes. But, you know, I'm sort of spoiler crazy here.
Yeah.
Do I mention the fact John Oliver's in it, for example?
Yes, he's in episode. Well, he's in every episode.
Right, so that's cool.
Yes.
So John Oliver, who is now a world-renowned TV star because of his show in America, he's from the Midlands, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Cut his teeth where, here?
Yeah.
On the 11 o'clock show, was it?
He did a show with Andy Zaltzman. He did lots of satirical podcasts and... The Bugle he did.
But now he's massive.
Now he's huge in America. But the joke in the show is that he's desperate to be in my show because he wants to get his big break in the UK.
But to be honest, he's not that good an actor, right? Because he clearly is desperate to be on your show.
It's obvious.
He was so funny. So we only had a day with him, and we had to film it all over Zoom.
Don't say that.
Oh, sorry. We had like a month with him.
He was literally, you know, he had nothing to do. He was trying to plait sand over there.
He was desperate to get in our show.
Blowing in the wind.
Yeah, he's desperate to be a singer in this sitcom. Yeah. So he sees me as the gatekeeper to... I'm sort of the Simon Cowell in his eyes.
And because he's a big deal in America, he thinks, well, you know, I demand songs. Mm-hmm. That's what he's saying.
He's written four long songs.
Four long songs. Yeah. To be in one episode.
Yeah.
And he looks more and more like Ben Elton with every shot.
He does. He's a very smart-looking man, I think. His hair's like a Lego man.
He's brushed up very well, hasn't he? But how big is he in America, John?
I mean, he's huge. He's won, I think, 11 Emmys.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I mean, he's absolutely enormous.
How many Emmys have you won?
I've been nominated for one international Emmy. And you get sent a medal, which is this. It's the only medal I own.
Right.
But we didn't win.
Does that feature in the sitcom? Should do. You should have... season two.
You're right, it should.
You have to get all the awards out and polish them. And be seen secretly polishing them by candlelight at night.
If we can keep talking like there is going to be a season two, that would be good. Because we've got so many ideas.
It's so funny. It's brilliant.
I agree, Chris. I really like it, but I just want to, we're so desperate to make more because it was really, really, really fun to do.
I expected amazing things, but this is way beyond. It's way beyond. Honestly, I think it's brilliant. You know, I like sitcoms. I really like sitcoms, but I don't watch them.
Yeah.
Because time is precious. And time,
I agree.
You know, you never get any more. It's the one thing that, you know, life doesn't do refunds in, and it doesn't, regardless if you keep the receipt. But I'm watching the show.
One of the real strengths of the show is it's 22 and a half minutes long. And that's a real plus.
Yeah, unlike the Beatles documentary, which got dragged a bit, to be honest. Oh, 9 hours.
Is it 9 hours?
Yes.
It is 9 hours.
Nine hours.
I've watched it three times, though.
Yeah.
I really like it.
27 hours worth.
27 hours.
What's the name again? The guy who directed it? What's his name again?
Oh, he found all the footage and he put it all together.
Yeah.
I'm going to say he's called...
Oh, Janet Jackson. Janet Jackson,
yeah.
Did it.
Thank you, Chris.
Oh, no, it was Peter Jackson. You're awesome. Your show is awesome.
Thank you, Chris.
If you are staying in today because of this treacherous weather, you need to get on all four, jump on all four, and watch the Horn Section television show.
Episode one first.
If you like.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
They say football is a game of two halves, which isn't true at all. I can get through three or four pints watching Sky Sports on a Sunday afternoon. But we do.
Very droll.
Thank you. But we do have what she calls her halftime team talk with our next guest's book, The First Half, out now. So please welcome the newly crowned and forever Sports Presenter of the Year. It's Gabby Logan.
Gabby!
Thank you for having me.
Gabby Logan. Great book, guys. We've all loved it.
Oh, thank you so much. You've all got a coffee each, which is lovely.
I've got my notes and everything. It's brilliant. Actually, to be honest, I got up to where you joined Sky, page 223. I hope that's allowed.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine.
Okay, it's brilliant. Great story. Very inspiring. You know, I thought I knew you, but I didn't know you. It's all very interesting. You start the book by saying what you used to lie in bed thinking about as a child. Mm-hmm. What do you lie in bed thinking about now as a grown-up?
Do you know, I'm very lucky. I fall asleep within 5 seconds of it in the pillow.
You? Yeah. You are lucky.
I am very lucky.
If I could have one superpower, that would be it.
I've also learnt to fall asleep in the back of a cab and anywhere I could just take a power nap. I've become very adept at sleeping in the last. I think it's having kids. I mean, you've got loads of kids.
Got all the kids. You talked to the Queen about your children. Or she talked to you about your children.
She talked to me.
The Queen's in the book, everyone. Tell us about you and the Queen.
Well, so ITV was celebrating their 50th birthday with this big gala event, and I just had twins 6 weeks before, and it was the first time I'd put a dress on, gone out, put a bit of makeup on, and I was with my good friend Kirsty Gallagher, and Claire Sweeney was in our little trio, and the Queen was being introduced to people from ITV with her lady-in-waiting, had obviously briefed her a little bit, and so she'd obviously told her I'd just had twins, and the Queen said, "You've just had twins?" And I said, "Yeah." She said, "How does one breastfeed twins?" Which was quite presumptuous that I was indeed breastfeeding, but I was, luckily, because then I could explain the rugby ball hold where you have one child on each breast.
Yeah.
And she was fascinated by this to the point where the others didn't get a look in. And then about 5 years later, I was at Clarence House as a Prince's Trust Ambassador, and Camilla, the Queen Consort, as she was then, of course, just Prince Charles's wife, came over and said, "My daughter's having twins. How does one breastfeed twins?" And I said, "Just ask your mother." No, I didn't. I explained to her. But I thought, this is a bizarre fascination this family has with breastfeeding. Yeah, so that's not the main kind of theme of the book, but it does.
It is in there, though. And, you know, there's no point in denying it because you've written about it. You talk about so many things. Very funny, very candid. You talk about the moment you knew what you wanted to do for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
They say that those who can't, those who can do, those who can't teach, and those who can't teach and do may commentate. There is that going on. But for a while, you could do, couldn't you?
Well, I did. Yeah, I did a bit of sport. Is that what you?
Yeah.
So I was an international rhythmic gymnast, and it was through that I first entered a TV studio, and thought, this is fantastic.
By the way, not just any TV studio.
No, I was on Blue Peter as a 15-year-old, advertising a big competition at Wembley, and I just loved it. It was the old TV centre, iconic building that I'd only ever seen on TV. You know, living in Leeds, I'd come down on the train, walked into that amazing building, walked into the studio, and loved it. And we were live as well, you know, doing live TV and making up a routine to the Blue Peter music. And I wrote to the producer and said, "Give us a job. How do I get into telly?" And he said, "Go to university," which wasn't quite the structured advice I was looking for. But years later, I ended up doing a show with him on ITV2. And he said, "You took my advice then, I see." But it was such a light bulb moment for me. I thought, oh, how do I get into this industry?
And, yeah, you just knew, you did know.
Yeah, I had a backup plan. I did a law degree. But the whole time I was doing my law degree, I was doing a breakfast show on a commercial radio station.
Yeah, so. Metro.
Yeah.
And it's a great story. So many. You start to bite off talking about the fact you were from a family of sporters. I'm saying sporters, you don't use that term, but our little Boo, who's a twin, she says she's a sporter.
I like that.
Mummy,
like
I'm
that.
A sporter. And you were a family of sporters.
We were. My mum tried to make us a family of musicians or actors or something else. You know, she was like forever encouraging us to sign up for different after school clubs. But my dad was a professional footballer. My brother was a footballer. My other brother ended up, you know, playing a lot of football. My sister and I were gymnasts, but we did every sport as kids. You know, we were playing tennis and we were doing athletics and swimming and all the usual team school sports. So, yeah, my poor mum was the classic kind of, as they call in America, soccer mum, you know, driving us all around, dropping us all off.
She said, "I just need to stop this. Please do something else that you can do in your bedroom. Play the cello. I'll buy the cello. I'll go into debt for a cello. Just stop. Sorry, I just want my life back."
I mean, it's commitment, isn't it? As you know, and that's what you realise when you're older. You look back at your parents and how they... Yeah,
I know.
Gave up so much time and energy, but I think they get the rewards back.
Yeah, and I'm sure. Well, they have in your case, no question about that. So you wanted to be a tennis player, though, and you sort of blame Yorkshire.
Living in Leeds.
You give a lot of love to Yorkshire as well, but you do blame Yorkshire for the fact that you're not a Wimbledon sort of household name.
Well, it's interesting. I lived in Canada with my dad playing for Vancouver Whitecaps, and the tennis was abundant, sport was abundant and cheap and accessible. And then I came back to Leeds at 10 years old with absolute, you know, plans to conquer the world of tennis, and I was going to be Wimbledon champion, and there was nowhere to play tennis. There were no indoor courts. There was one private club which was, you know, exorbitantly expensive that I was never going to be able to join, that had one indoor court at the time. And my mum said, "Oh, play at Roundy Park." And Roundy Park was only open about 2 months of the year around Wimbledon, and the courts, the nets were taken down, and it was turned into kind of a skate park or something. And so at that point, I just couldn't play tennis for 6 months. And that's when I started going along to the gymnastics club with my sister. And it's interesting, Matthew Syed wrote a book called Bounce, and he talks in that book about proximity to venues and how that influences
And
that I was a classic product. I mean, listen, I might have been a terrible tennis player ultimately, but my passion was tennis, but I just couldn't pursue it. And I think I probably would have had a better physical kind of predisposition for that sport than the one I chose, which I constantly struggle to be flexible enough for. So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what heights did you reach as far as rhythmic gymnastics?
I suppose the Commonwealth Games was my biggest competition.
Not too shabby.
And I represented Great Britain quite a few times, but I didn't become an Olympian, which was my ultimate dream. And, you know, so to work on the Olympics now, as I have done 4 Olympics for the BBC, is a joy, because it is, for me, one of the greatest shows on earth.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
We love her to Blue Peter and back via On the Farm and BT Sport. And we love him more and more every Strictly season, though he's not won yet, but this is the year. It's week 7 of Strictly Come Dancing on BBC One at 7 p.m. tomorrow, and preparing to waltz away from the dance-off once again, it's Helen Skelton and Gorka Marquez.
Good morning, guys! Yay!
Hello.
Happy Strictly to you. Happy Strictly to you. How's it going?
Good.
Very good, yeah.
That was very rock and roll.
I love the energy here, you know? It's good energy. I like this.
Yeah, I'm knackered now, to be honest. I couldn't get through 90 seconds on Strictly to save my life.
The other day, you made me do one move to the whole song, didn't you? And he's like, "Keep going. This is stamina training. This is stamina training." I was like, how can a minute and a half of dancing be more tiring than a marathon? But somehow it is.
Helen Skelton is amazing. We love you, Helen. We've always loved you. We always will. And thank you for everything you do with our charity. charities. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Will you come back and host at Carfest next year?
Yes, you did that. You played that brilliantly. You're amazing. Of course, I'll come back.
Okay, if we win, she will.
Yeah, of course. This should come anyway. Gorka, out of 10, right? Because yes. I know Helen really well. Mm-hmm. Out of 10, how much effort does this girl put into everything she does?
11, she's 12, amazing. 13, she's 15, 20. She commits to everything. And that's what I love about her. Is whatever I said to her to do, she goes, yeah, I'm doing it. Even if I say, okay, let's change it. No, I want to do that. Don't change it. I want to do it.
Okay, so cool, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And is that a massive relief for you when you get paired with someone and you think, I got a goodie here?
Yeah, that's what it is strictly. You know, sometimes you get people who are like professional or they have dancing background or they can perform. But what you want is someone who commits to it, who listens to you, who wants to do well and puts the effort like she does. That's the most important thing.
Sometimes I take it too far, though. Like, I'm quite literal. Like the walk in last week, he was like, walk in there. So I walked. He's like, what are you doing? I was like, trying to dance. He's like, no, just walk normally.
Keep your powder dry, Helen. Do what your teacher tells you, for heaven's sake. And do you have a regime? Do you have a set schedule that you prefer to work to, Gorka? Not just with Helen, but with all the partners you've had over the years.
I mean, every partner is different, you know? So the more we get to know each other, the more we know how to work with each other.
Yeah.
So with us, we love a coffee and a toast in the morning before we start. So that allowed us to catch up in, like, kids, home things, and then leave that aside, and then, okay, now it's time to dance.
What's it like to be gifted the opportunity to be taught by somebody as good at their job as Gorka? And what's it been like from a physical fitness and sort of focus point of view? Because you have not gone unchallenged in the past with your Amazon Rose and your high wire over Battersea Power Station, all that kind of stuff. You're awesome. You are already awesome. But what is this chapter of your awesomeness?
God, this is so good for my ego, isn't it? I'll come here again. He's going to make me come here for an ego boost every week. No, I think this is different because with any of the stuff I've done before, which I've been so lucky to be part of, all you have to do is try. You know, it's a fine line between brave and stupid. You just have to try. Whereas with this, you actually have to be good. And what?
What do you mean try? Really, you did a high wire over Battersea. All you got to do is try. You rode up the, or down, was it up or down the Amazon?
Down
the Amazon.
I was a giant poo stick for 2 months. No, you, but you know, I didn't have to like this. You've got to like try and master a craft.
Right.
And like, you know, I keep explaining it. You know when you teach your kid to write cat and you spend all day going cut at her and they're like, yeah, I've got it, yeah, I've got it. And you get to the end of the day and they go, I've got it, dog, duh, oh, guh. That's what it's like for Gorka. Like, he spends all day teaching me something. And then bless him, he looks at me and goes, one more time, my love. One more time.
And so you have your toasty in the morning, you catch up. And how does it work then? Is it, because you can overtrain, can't you? You know, mm-hmm. when I was learning to fly, you get to a point where you might have a 2-hour slot booked, but after an hour he'll say, we need to go down now. And I said, why? He said, because I can see that you're not going to be able to take in any more right now.
So obviously she doesn't like to have breaks, so we go as long as we can until lunch, and then around like 2-3 o'clock, you can see her eyes start to like cross and like shut, and you're like, okay, you need caffeine now. She was like, no, I'm good. Like, no, you need a caffeine break.
Just caffeine or other drugs?
Just caffeine. Yeah, okay. And water.
Fair enough.
It's early days.
You got to ask the questions, man. You don't have to ask the tough journalistic questions. Yep. You know,
sometimes I ibuprofen.
Looking for a scoop here. and so when is your when are you best? When are you most available for your best work?
Like 10 o'clock, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So yeah, we have our catch up. Uh-huh. We talk. He always says how well his child has slept. Right. To which I was like, oh, well done. My child didn't sleep at all. 1-0 Gorka. And then we dance until 1 or 2, like you say. And then he's like, right, you need 5 minutes.
And how fit do you feel?
Yeah, I do feel fit.
Do you feel as fit as you've ever felt? Or
yeah, because it's a different level of fitness.
Right.
I've never eaten more. Like, I eat so much. He's giving me croissants and cakes and stuff.
Have you tried a Krona?
Not yet.
No,
we are.
You know what Krona is?
Yeah, it's a croissant and a donut.
Yeah, it's great,
isn't
it?
It's amazing.
I thought it was cryptocurrency.
Oh.
But it's not. It should be.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Okay, that's the cinnamon and the sugar is so good.
Yeah. I mean, there was the story in the papers this week about the reed dance. Do you want to talk about that or not? It's up to you. I don't mind.
What we would say is...
Can we just explain what happened?
Yes.
You explain what happened, if you don't mind.
So, obviously, whoever's in the bottom two, they have to dance off against each other. Jimmy Bye danced off. Love Jimmy Bye. Love the group nap. Great
bloke. Bye-bye, Jimmy.
Bye-bye. I mean, that was just headline written for them, wasn't it? And then Fleur danced. The dance restarted because there was a little trip But to be honest, I get so nervous I can't watch.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think it was? I'm not going to ask you. Do you think it was fair or not? It happened. It happened. Mm. You know, these things can happen. And the show must go on. Of course, it must. Gorka, how many years you been in this?
Seven.
How is it for you? How are you fair?
I'm loving it. You know, and hopefully this is the seven lucky
seven, baby.
Yes, so
realistically, realistically, because it's better to be realistic, isn't it? Optimism is fine, but realism, I think, is far more useful.
Yeah.
And efficacious. What do you think your chances are? Let's start with getting to the final.
I think there is a chance, but again, I think there is a chance for everybody. This year has been a year which the level, it's so equal that normally when you get like week after or after Blackpool, you go like, okay, now we don't know what's going to happen because it's so level up. But I think week seven already, everybody's thinking, who is going to be the next to leave? We don't know it. They are so good, all of them, and so similar. They can be anybody.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Vassos Alexander introducing someone else.
He is the heroic stoic who sold millions of books, has a smash hit podcast and still finds it in him to talk to us at 4:35 a.m. local time. His latest book, Discipline is Destiny, is out now. So let's pack our bags and get ready, folks, because we're all going on a Ryan holiday.
Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, good to be with you guys.
I love the book, Ryan. I think it might be, comparison is the thief of joy, I know that, but I think it might be your favourite book of mine so far.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, it's so cool. It's by the nightstand. It's not going to go anywhere else. I love it. I don't really know how to talk to you about it because every sort of paragraph is full of gold. I suppose we could start with our very own Queen, Queen Elizabeth II. You pay such homage, such reverence to her. And you wrote this before she passed. Let's talk about her and let's also talk about Angela Merkel.
Okay.
So why was
I wanted to...
go, off you go. Sorry.
I mean, I wanted to talk about the different kinds of discipline, right? I think people often think of discipline as this physical thing. You know, it's what time you wake up in the morning. It's how far you push yourself in the weight room or on a run, what you eat or don't eat. And of course, these are all really important forms of discipline. But I think in life, the discipline that's called from us most often is the discipline to keep what we think to ourselves, the discipline to follow the rules, the discipline to observe the protocols of our profession, to not lose our temper, right? To see things through. And so, you know, I found them actually both to be very similar embodiments of, let's say, a less masculine form of virtue, at least in terms of how we understand it, but arguably a more important, a rarer and more powerful form of discipline, the sort of discipline of temperament, you know, the discipline of self-control in the emotional sense, which arguably is more important for a leader than charisma or ambition or even genius or talent.
Yeah, you talk about Queen Elizabeth II of you know, she's the ultimate sort of reigning royal the world has ever known, yet she didn't have that much power. However, she was still able to sort of magically instill her opinion and her influence on situations.
Yeah, I mean, you could say of the British royals that there's more things they can't do than things they can't do. And it's a job, you know, defined primarily by restraint. Right? Everything is done literally in your name, and yet you have almost no say in what those things are. And so the power of that position is in the dignity, the consistency, the observance of the rules. And, you know, each individual instance of it doesn't seem particularly impressive. But over a long enough timeline, it begins to look almost superhuman. I mean, imagine 70 years in the same job, first and foremost. But second, she never gives an on-the-record interview. She never expresses an opinion. She never gets upset. She never loses her temper. She's seen falling asleep on the job one time in seven decades, and it was when she was in her 80s in a lecture about magnets.
which is allowed. I think that's allowed once. You know, it's so cool. Angela Merkel, of course, she was and continues to be the sort of the genius of normalcy. You know, the more normal you keep it, the more things you can get done. For people who aren't aware of the way she still goes about her life, can you speak to that for a moment?
Well, there's a moment right as the pandemic is beginning where she's seen at a grocery store in Germany shopping like everyone else, strictly following the protocols and rules about, you know, how much you could buy of this or that, as if she is not, you know, the leader of the free world at this moment. And look, no leader is perfect, so I'm not making a comment on her political policies, but I am making an argument about someone, you know, absolute power is supposed to corrupt absolutely. That doesn't seem to happen. Leaders are supposed to have enormous egos, be very ambitious, be very driven. And she is ambitious and driven. And yet, once again, she has an ability to keep this under check, right? She has the ability to understand that often what a difficult task requires is not charisma, but discipline and poise and humility. She has a little sign on her desk that says calmness is strength. And again, this is a really important form of discipline, the ability to be cool under pressure, to not get rattled by things, to not get upset about things, to not take everything personally, but to show up and see them rationally and clearly. The Stoics who talk about seeing things in the calm light of mild philosophy. And this is what I think great leaders are able to do.
And you talk about one of the most powerful words in the world being the word no, because, you know, every time you say yes, there is an opportunity cost to that. Thank you for not saying no to this. And I'm very sorry about the opportunity cost going forward on your Monday.
No. The best line I heard about no recently was that no is a complete sentence.
Unapologetically. All right. Ryan, you're always welcome here. Sweet dreams, my friend. Lots of love to you and your family and your cattle and your lovely life. And whenever you want us, we're here.
Honored. It was great to talk with you. And good morning, everyone.
No. Discipline is Destiny by Ryan Holiday. All his books are gold, absolute gold. And this is just another golden brick in his literary wall.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast. And you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.